how has making room for generosity been a blessing to you personally and spiritually?
I mean, when we walk in here every day on Sundays, everything that we see is part of, is a result of, or a product of giving. You've got administrative, you've got building expenses, you've got staff, the local outreach, global outreach, missions, the sound. I mean, it's all encompassing.
The video equipment, everything to be able to broadcast.
This, what we're doing, that's a ministry. And all of those things are encompassed in our giving.
When you are tithing, when you're giving, that's not something you do on accident. You don't just, trip and drop a percentage into the offering plate, exactly. You have to make plans for that.
Sure.
That forces you to look at your budget. That forces you to kind of look at, okay, well, how much are we spending on X, Y, and Z? And where might we be needing to cut back?
Proverbs 2, I mean, started talking about giving of your first fruits of the priority of giving our best.
Yeah.
It talks about proportionate giving.
Yeah.
Where we look at our income and a proportion of that. It talks about setting aside. Paul said, set aside a gift so when I come, it's ready to be collected and to give, to be given in that way, to be systematic. So he talks about it being cheerful, that we should not be pushed to give or give reluctantly, but to give cheerfully. So all these are part. There's so much to it that encompasses every aspect of our life.
Well, good morning again. And so glad to be here. I too want to say hello to all those who are watching on television online, our friends in Cuba, Venezuela, Scotland as well. And yes, I was able to have a conversation with Thad Roller, who is on the ground in Colombia. They were actually getting ready this week for their annual conference whenever the earthquake hit. And so it was a logistical nightmare, but they made some changes and were able to have that. And it was really good for them as a church family to come together in the midst of a lot of devastation. We know a lot of pastors lost their homes. And just so please be praying for our friends in Colombia. Also, if you do not own your own copy of God's Word and you want a Bible like the one I'm holding in my hand, there's a Bible wall right out here to my right, your left. Please pick one up and take that if you will read it. And also, coming up at the end of the month, we're going to have our 1024 service, as you saw in the announcements. And one of the things we need you to do is to register for the meal. It is a free meal, by the way. But here's the QR code. And look at that fried chicken. Doesn't that just look amazing? Man, I don't even know if we're having fried chicken, but it looks good. But if you'll pull out your phone and scan that QR code, you can register to be here. We need to know who is coming. And thank you. I know hundreds of you have already, so thank you for that. But that is going to be a special day. You do not want to miss that 1024 service, and then we're going to celebrate after. If you have your message notes, please pull those out as we get started, because we are in week 3 of our series entitled In His Steps. If you have not been around here for a while, one of the things you need to know is that for about 50 years, every year, we as a church pause and we ask a question. We actually pray a prayer, and the prayer is, God, how do you want to use me this year for your glory and in serving others? God, how do you want to use me? Now, you may be saying that's an odd question to be asking in August, but August is the beginning of our ministry year. Our ministry year goes with the school year, and so this is the beginning of our ministry year, and so we pause and we ask that question. And there are 4 values that we believe are very important, and we have believed these for decades here at this church. We believe these 4 values are very, very important for us to be fruitful and faithful in God's kingdom. It starts with prayer, and so week 1 we talked about passionate prayer. And then last week we talked about service, but we call it surrendered service, where we let God direct us in how he wants us to serve. Next week we're going to talk about intentional presence, or what it means to live together in community with other people. But today I want to talk about radical generosity. And so I just got to tell you, every year there is 1 sermon a year on money, and you made it. It is today. But before you start tuning me out, let me just say, money is something that affects every one of us. Every single one of us. It's something we all think about. It's something we all need to live on. But it is something that is absolutely universal in every way. And what I love about the Bible is that the Bible deals with every aspect of our life. If you take God's word, you can figure out what does God say about every aspect of our life and how are we to live that out. And one of the things that is the most sensitive to talk about in our society, in church, is this thing called money. Now, we talk about money everywhere. We talk about money all the time, right? Outside the church. But one Sunday a year, we dedicate that Sunday to talk about this topic because God has a lot to say about it. And one of the things that the Bible is very, very clear on is that when it comes to money, you will either have control of your view of money and your use of money, or money will have control of you. One or two, those are the only two options. One of those two things are going to happen. You're either going to have control in your view and use of money, or money is going to have control of you. That's simply how it works. And here's the thing. Every one of us sitting in here, every one of us watching online on television, we all have a philosophy of money. We have a view of money. We have a way in which we go about using money. We all do. Every single one of us. Every one of us. And we sometimes we approach that differently. Some of us, we want to stockpile money. We want our accounts to be as big as possible because we think that if our accounts are as big as possible, that somehow that gives us security in life. We think that. Sometimes we don't want to hoard money. Sometimes we just want as much money as we can get so that we can buy as much stuff as we can. And some of us are even addicted to buying things, whether they be big or small. And the older you get, the bigger the toys get, right? Sometimes we don't want money so that we can buy things. Sometimes we want money so that we can purchase experiences. We want to buy time and trips and those kind of things. Very popular today. Sometimes we don't want to buy experiences. Sometimes we want money or the perception that we have money just so that other people think we are somebody in life. There are many different ways in which you can view money. But here's the thing. The question is, what does God say about it? This is the question we ask about everything else in life, so we have to ask it about money. What does God say about it? And the truth is, I want you to know what God says about money, and I'll tell you why. In 25 years of ministry, listen, you may not want me to preach this sermon today, but in 25 years of ministry, issues with money is the number one thing I talk with people about over every other human problem you can have. Issues of money. It causes relational conflict in your marriages. It causes problems in your families. Problems with inheritances. Oh, gracious. It's all connected to money. I have so many conversations where the tension or the problems or the arguing, it goes back to this issue with money. That's why I want you to know what God says about it. And so if you in your message notes, notice there's a quote there at the top that I put there for you. And the quote is from Hudson Taylor. Hudson Taylor was a missionary to China. Amazing man, by the way. He was the first one to go to inland China. He was the first one to go in and actually dress like the people. And he said this when he was reflecting on his life. He said, "The less I spent on myself and the more I gave to others, the fuller of happiness and blessing did my soul become." I don't know any one of us who are sitting here today who says we do not want our soul to be both happy and blessed. And one of the things that Hudson Taylor says is the key to that is this idea of giving, not just consuming. But the question is, how do we get there? And how do we get there is we have to understand that in the Bible, we are given a promise. And this promise is actually repeated in multiple places, but I want us to look at Proverbs chapter 3. The promise in Proverbs chapter 3, verses 9 and 10 is this. It says, "Honor the Lord with your wealth." Now, you may say, okay, do I get to pick what that looks like? Read the rest of the verse. "Honor the Lord with your wealth and with the best part of everything you produce." Give God your best, he says. That's what it means to honor him. But notice the result. "Then he," God, "will fill your barns with grain and your vats will overflow with good wine." Do you see the blessing in that? You see the blessing. Now, here's the truth. The truth is that we can read that verse or we can read verses like this and you don't have to believe them at all. You don't have to believe them at all. As a matter of fact, you can read any verse and you may not believe it, right? You have to choose whether or not to believe that. But before you make the choice to not believe it, you need to understand the warning. And the warning is in 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 9 and 10. The warning is this. Paul writes to Timothy and says, those who want to get rich, notice, they just want to get rich. Doesn't say they are. Those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a trap and into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. Now, if we just stop the sentence there, or stop the passage there, we say, yeah, okay, I can see that. I can see that in non-Christians' lives, people who don't walk with God. Notice what he says next, verse 10. For the love of money, not money. Money's neutral. It's a thing. It's paper. It's coin. It's numbers. But the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. Some people eager for money have wandered from the faith. Some people. Notice they're eager for it. They don't even have it necessarily. Eager for money have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs, he says. That's sobering. Because what Paul is saying is how you view money, how you use money, it's either going to help you grow in your faith or it's going to kill your faith. How you view money and how you use money is either going to help you and others walk with God or it's going to help you walk away from God. Now, that's a warning. Now, what I would like to assume is that we all want to live in the promise. And the promise is to honor the Lord with our wealth, with the best parts of that, and then let him bless us. And so I want to ask the question, how can I honor God with my money? How can you honor God with your money? A better way to ask this question would probably be, how do I honor God with his money that happens to be in my pocket? And we kind of chuckle at that, but it's true because point number one is this. We have to understand these first two points. Point number one is this, is that everything I have comes from God. This is where it all starts. We have to realize every single thing that is good in my life, down to the very air you are breathing right now, my friend, it's all from God. Every bit of it. If you go to 1 Chronicles 29, the very last chapter, David prays this prayer. And in this moment, he says, but who am I and who are my people that we could give anything to you, God? Who are we? Everything we have has come from you, and we give you only what you first gave us. See, David understood this idea. The people of Israel at certain points throughout history, they understood this idea. Everything I have that I bring and I offer back to God, he gave it to me first. If you go look at the festivals and the feast in the Old Testament, you see this concept all the way through. If you look in Deuteronomy 16, this is a point whenever they're coming to worship for the Feast of Booths or Tabernacles, and a part of the instructions here are that all must give as they are able. Right? Just as you're able, but notice what it says, according to the blessings given to them by the Lord your God. Notice he says, you give in proportion to what God has already given you. This is how God has set this up, that we give in proportion to what God has given to us. We do this all the time in life, all the time, all the time. Have you ever been at a ball game or somewhere and your kid or grandkid, they want something from the concession stand, and you give them money and they go to the concession stand and they come back? Your change is still in their pocket, and they go, look what I bought. And you're sitting there going, you didn't buy that. You may have made the exchange of money for product, but you didn't purchase it, right? Everybody with me? Same thing with God. We can walk around saying, look what I bought. And God's in heaven going, you didn't buy that. I bought that. He said, well, no, I did it. I worked hard for that. I gave you the ability. I gave you the opportunity. I opened the door for you. I helped you, the whole nine yards. Everything we have comes from God. We have to see that. If we can't see that, then the rest of my points are not even going to make sense. But everything we have comes from God. Number two, we got to get this one. Number two is that every material thing God gives me in this life will not go with me into the next life. There is nothing of this material world that is going to go with you into heaven. Not one thing. And both Testaments, Old and New Testament, are very consistent on this. Both of them. Ecclesiastes, Solomon says in Ecclesiastes 5, everyone comes naked from their mother's womb, and as everyone comes, so they depart. They take nothing for their toil, that's your work, that they carry in their hands. Nothing. Nothing you can carry in your hands goes with you into the next life. The New Testament says this, 1 Timothy 6, for we brought nothing into the world, and we can take nothing out of the world. Again, both Testaments say the same thing. I want to show you something. First thing I want to show you is this. This is a baseball. It stays in this box, and I've had this since the 1990s. Yes, I'm that old. This baseball was given to me at Christmas time, and on the top it says Birmingham Barons Baseball. I don't know if you know this or not, but the Birmingham has a minor league baseball team with the White Sox AA team, just like we do here with the Biscuits. Well, this baseball is signed by somebody, and the signature on this baseball says Michael Jordan. Ever heard of him? Arguably the greatest basketball player of all time, but he took a little break, and he decided to play baseball, if you would remember. If you don't, you can Google it and find out. Well, my uncle was the head of his security detail the entire time he was in Birmingham, and he got this ball for me. This is valuable. This is Michael Jordan's signature, not on a basketball, on a baseball. He was a horrible hitter, but I have his signature on the on this, right? On the ball, it's there, right? And this is worth money, right? I've never even seen another one. I know they're there, but I've never seen one. If you find one, take a picture of it and send it to me, but this is valuable. I mean, and I've, again, every office I've had, this has been in my office. This was in my room when I was a little boy. I mean, this is a prized possession, but I will sell it for $5,000. Just kidding. I'll take seven, though. Seven. This is valuable. But you know what? At the end of the day, you know what this is? It's a ball with ink on it. That's all it is. It's a ball with ink on it. Let me show you something a little more valuable to me. Something that's a little more valuable to me is this bat. This bat, another minor league team, the Huntsville Stars, they don't exist anymore. I got this bat when I think it was one of my all-star teams. Yes, I made all-stars, not bragging, but anyway. We had a good year, and at the end of the season, we went to a Huntsville Stars game, and it was bat day. Everybody got a bat. This bat used to be blue because that was the color of the team, but here's the thing. Me and my brother got one of these bats, and whenever we got home, you can see it was blue. We wanted our dad to strip it down and to stain it so that it looked like his bat growing up, which he still has. And so my dad has a bat, my brother has a bat, and I have this bat. Every office I've ever had, this sits in my office. This is sentimental to me. See, here's the point. The ball, it's worth money, worldly money. People will buy it. This is worth more to me because it's sentimental. It's personal. I look at this bat and I go straight back, just straight back. I know where I was sitting on the third base side. I remember the day like it was yesterday. I can still smell the popcorn in the air. This takes me back to a core memory in my life. But you know what this is at the end of the day? It's a stick of wood. And it's not going with me. Now listen, I know some of you are not sentimental. I mean, some of y'all, I mean, you'll sell a kidney or a kid. I get it. All right? I get it. But I am. But still, it's a stick of wood. You with me? There's nothing, and when I say nothing, I don't care how much you love it, how much you like it, how much you spend on it, there is nothing in this world that's going with you into the next. And if you don't get these first two points, the rest of what I'm going to say does not make sense, okay? So everything we have comes from God, yes? And not only that, everything God gives us in this world is not going with us into the next. Now, point number three is this, is that when I give willingly, notice the word willingly, when I give willingly, I am responding to God's goodness in my life. It is true that He gives me everything. It is true that all the stuff I have will not go with me. But while I live this life, when I willingly give, It is actually a response because I see and understand the goodness of God in my life. I see that God has been good to me. God has given me things. Therefore, I give to others. We see this throughout the Old Testament. We see it with Moses. We saw it with Moses in Exodus 25. God tells him to tell the people of Israel to bring me their sacred offerings. And then notice what he says. Accept the contributions, accept those from all whose hearts are moved to offer them. All whose hearts are moved to offer them. Whenever we give, giving is an act of the heart, not just the pocketbook. It involves our heart. And then we see the response 10 chapters later in Exodus 35. In Exodus 35, verse 22, it says, so both men and women came, all whose hearts were willing, a willing heart. Notice the heart. They brought to the Lord their offerings of gold, brooches, earrings, rings from their fingers, necklaces, and they presented gold objects of every kind as a special offering to the Lord. Now notice what happens here. Notice that the Lord gives a call to come and give the offering. Notice that the people respond, but when they respond from a willing heart. But what this tells us is the response to God's blessing in our life is always to be a blessing. We see it with David and the people. In 1 Chronicles 29, if we go back there, it says the people rejoiced over the offerings, for they had given freely and wholeheartedly, not begrudgingly, not because they were told to, but wholeheartedly to the Lord. And the King David was filled with joy. If you go a few verses later, David says this. He says, I know, my God, that you examine our hearts. Notice he didn't say you examine the offerings. He didn't say you examine the gold to see if it's pure gold or is it 14 karat gold. What kind of gold is it? No, he says you examine our hearts and rejoice when you find integrity there. You know I have done all this with good motives, and I have watched your people offer their gifts willingly and joyously. Again, the response to God's blessing in our life is always to be a blessing. We give because we have received so much from him, and we see his goodness in our life. But number four is this. Number four is that being generous is a decision. Being generous is a decision. It's not just something that happens in our heart, but it's something that happens in our mind. And we have to understand this because Christians are marked by their generosity. They always have been. We're marked by the fact that we are generous people because we have a generous God. And it's not just pulling on our heartstring. It's not just we just see the commercial and, okay, the dogs are hurting, the song's playing, and man, I need to send in $10 a month. Like, it's not just that kind of transaction where we're just pulling on people's hearts, trying to coerce them. Instead, we're generous because God has been generous to us. Look at 2 Corinthians 9. 2 Corinthians 9, 7. There, this was referenced earlier in the video. You must each person in the church, decide, make a decision. But notice where the decision is being made. You must make a decision in your heart how much to give. And don't give reluctantly or in response to pressure. Like, the giving to God is not about just, or someone trying to manipulate you to do so. No, no, no. That's not what we do as God's people. Instead, it says, he says, for God loves a person who gives cheerfully. Cheerfully. There was this conversation that was happening between Jesus and some of the people in Matthew 22. And in Matthew 22, the conversation was about Caesar, and it was about taxes, and it was about money, and someone holds up a coin, it has a picture of Caesar on it. And Jesus is like, well, whose face is on that? And they say, Caesar's, they reply. Jesus says, well then, give to Caesar what belongs to Caesar, and give to God what belongs to God. Now, there's a lot of things that Jesus is saying there, but a part of what he's saying is that you see the coin, it has Caesar's face on it. Do you know why Caesar's face was on the coin? Because he wanted it there. Because Caesar had built his entire identity around money and power. And what Jesus, a part of what Jesus is saying here is that, yeah, you want to give that to Caesar? That's Caesar. It has his image on it. But you and your life, you're made in the image of God. You can live differently. You don't have to live that way if you want to live for God. Instead, we can make decisions not to be people who try to hoard as much as we can, not for people who want money and power like Caesar. We can make decisions in order to be generous in this life. Number five. Number five is that God tells me to plan to be generous. to plan to be generous. And I know some of us, we just like to kind of live more spontaneously. I get that. There are moments when God tugs on our heart and we want to be a blessing to someone. Please do all of that. You want to be spontaneous, but you also have to be strategic. You need a plan. And you say, why do you need a plan? Well, I mean, Proverbs 11:25 says, the generous will prosper and those who refresh others will themselves be refreshed. And so a part of what we have to do is make sure we have a plan to do that, because if not, we will forget it. And not only that, we're naturally selfish. And if we want to prosper in life, and by the way, that word prosper means to flourish in life. I'm not saying that if you give money to God and you buy a holy hanky that he's going to give you a Mercedes. That's not what I'm saying, okay? Just so we're clear. All right? And if someone's saying that on television, just don't listen to them. All right? But if you want to flourish in life, the biblical word for prosper there, then we want to be generous. Therefore, we need to plan. We need to plan to be. Paul talks about it in these terms in 1 Corinthians 16. He talks about this idea of weekly giving. Not only were people paid in this way, but also Paul knows if we don't do something weekly, we're going to forget it and we're going to neglect it. And so what Paul says in 1 Corinthians 16 is on the first day of each week, guess what today is? First day of each week. First day of this week is today. On the first day of each week, you should each put aside a portion of the money you have earned. Don't wait until I get there to try to collect it all at once. The whole point of what Paul is saying there is have a plan and set aside regularly in your plan. Don't try to like cram at the end, like trying to cram for a test. Never going to work. But have a plan to be generous ongoing in your life. Ongoing. Now, we all know that Jesus said this too. In Luke 6:38, he says, give and you will receive. The amount that you give will determine the amount you get back. That is true. That is so true. God blesses us whenever we give. Yes, there is a truth to that. But so many times what we say and what I hear people say is well, I don't have that much to give. And I don't think it's going to make a difference anyway. My friends, that's not the point. We focus on amounts. We quantify all the time, right? All the time. And yes, I understand about tithing and that being 10% of your income. But I think that's the minimum. That's the start. At least that's how I want to live my life. You can live yours how you want to. But we quantify all these things in life. But 2 Corinthians 8:12 says, whatever you give is acceptable if you give it eagerly. Now, that word eagerly means it's talking about from your heart. You know what is right and what is wrong in that sense, he's saying. What you should and or not give. But notice what he says. And give according to what you have, not what you don't have. Listen, if you don't have it, don't worry about giving it. But the question is, what is it that God has given you? Then how much of that do you offer back to him? That's the question. That's the question. Listen, everybody needs a plan. You need three plans, actually. You need a plan for what you're going to spend, a plan for what you're going to save, and a plan for what you're going to give. And we see all three in Scripture. And you say, how do I know when I have a plan? Well, people who have a plan can tell you what that plan is. They can articulate the plan. And I hope you can. Both for what you spend, how you save, and what you give. Number 6 and 7. Listen, if you don't get these last two points, please get these. This is where it all goes to. It all starts with the first two. Everything we have comes from God. Nothing in this life can go with us into the next life. But while I'm here, in the meantime, when I give willingly, I'm responding to the goodness of God in my life. I need to make a decision, not just let my heart be tugged. I need to make a decision with my mind, and I need to plan to be generous. But the last two things are very important. Number 6 is this. Is what I do with my money shows me who I really trust. What you do with your money shows you who you really trust. It really does. Paul said this in 1 Timothy 6. Again, he says, teach those who are rich in this world not to be proud. Now let's stop there for just a second. You say, you see that? Who are rich in this world. Many of us are sitting here right now and you're going, I'm not rich in this world. Let me ask you one question. If you want to understand Paul's context here, let me ask you one question. How many in this room, by show of hands, can choose what you eat for lunch today? Go ahead. Every hand needs to be in the air. You're rich in this world. That's what he means. You know where your next meal's going to come from, and you're going to get to choose it. All right? So he says, teach those who are rich in this world not to be proud and not to trust in their money, which is so unreliable. We put so much stock in it. He says it's so unreliable. Their trust should be in God, who richly gives us all we need for our enjoyment, he even says. Tell them to use their money. Don't trust your money. Use your money to do good. To do good in this world. They should be rich in good works and generous to those in need, always being ready to share with others. By doing this, they will be storing up their treasure as a good foundation for the future so that they may experience true life. What Paul says in this moment is, do not trust your money, use your money, but trust God in how you use your money. This verse is not in your notes, but write down Proverbs 11:28. Proverbs 11:28 says, those who put their trust in money will fail, but those who trust in God will flourish. You put your trust in your money, I promise you, you're going to fail. It may be fun for a little while, but you're going to fail. You're not going to succeed in life the way God wants you to succeed in life. But if you put your trust in God, you will flourish. Again, that word prosper, flourish. What I do with my money shows me who I really trust. Number seven is this. Band, come on up. What I do with money shows me who I really love. It shows me who I really love. Go down to Luke 12, verse 34. Luke 12, verse 34 says, wherever your treasure is, there the desires of your heart will be also. However you spend your money, whatever you give to in life, and I've had conversations with people, and they brag about not wanting to give to the church, but how much they give to the university they already graduated from. I thought, you'd already had to pay for the degree. But Jesus says, wherever your treasure is, there the desires of your heart will be also. You know, as human beings, we only freely and willingly give, especially money, to things we love. Only. Willingly and freely give it. Now, taxes, whole other thing. Make sure you pay those or you go to jail. But when it comes to freely and willingly giving, we only give to those we love. Here's my last question as we close. Does the love of money control you? Are you controlled by this love, this desire for money? However you want to use it. Or do you love God enough to let him tell you how to control your money? Listen, everybody look right here. I know you're ready to go. I'm ready to go to lunch too. Listen, look, here's the thing. Whether you ever give a dollar here or not, you with me? You need to answer that question. Does the love of money drive you, control you? Or does your love for God, do you love him so much, you let him tell you how to control money? Whether you give here or not, if you don't figure that out, you could ruin your life, especially all you young people in the room right now who think this doesn't even apply to you because you don't even have a real job. You figure this out early, and I promise you, life will be a lot different. I promise you. But don't let the love and desire for money control you. Don't do it. Instead, let your love for God drive everything, even your money. Father, thank you that you love us enough to talk about even the hard things. And Lord, thank you that you love us enough to want us to live a life that is whole and full, a life that's not compartmentalized. And so, Lord, in this moment, I pray you help us surrender all of who we are, even our money, to you. Lord, may the love of money not take root in our hearts, but may our love for you grow every day and affect every aspect of our lives. Let it be so. In Jesus' name.